is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Jim Saras from the Saras Skills Academy, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years, and now with its integrated web platform, coaches have the ability to add video to plays and share them directly to their players' Android and iPhones via their mobile app. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching content and resources through their blog and PlayBank. For access to these plays and more information, visit FastModelSports.com or follow them on Twitter at FastModel.
This episode is brought to you by the Ready State Virtual Mobility Coach. Dr. Starrett is a movement and mobility coach for players in the NFL, MLB, NHL, and NBA, plus a doctor of physical therapy. Kelly has created a program called Virtual Mobility Coach. Every day, Virtual Mobility Coach gives you guided mobility videos. It walks you step by step through Kelly's proven techniques to relieve pain, improve range of motion, and improve performance. Try it completely free for 2 weeks, and if you decide to continue, you can get 10% off for life using promo code HOOPHEADS10. Visit thereadystate.com/hoopheads and use code HOOPHEADS10 at checkout. Again, that's thereadystate.com/hoopheads and use code HOOPHEADS10 when you sign up to get 10% off for the life of your membership after your 14-day free trial ends.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight to talk some NBA, and we have had some crazy good NBA performances over the last couple days.
Yeah, you know what? Me and Fred VanVleet have something in common, Mike.
You like pizza?
Oh no, we were both undrafted.
Okay, well there you go. That's something.
That's something. And Fred VanVleet tonight dropping 54, 11 three-pointers.
That's a lot of threes, man.
That's a lot of threes. He had 28 at the half with 8 threes. So really, really good. Obviously, Fred VanVleet, you know, I don't know if his wife's, you know, last time he was playing this well was when his wife just had the baby. I don't think they had a baby recently, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of.
But you know, good job by you, Fred VanVleet. I'm super happy for you. And the Raptors, yeah.
Raptors crawl back into the playoffs?
I mean, are they going to
stay in the play-in game, or do you think they get up? Can they get up into the top six?
I mean, theoretically, they at this point there's still lots of NBA time left. I mean,
there's five locks in the East, right?
Yeah,
the top five is not going to change. I mean, those five are going to be in.
They're a game behind Charlotte and us. Like, let's be honest. If I put our roster against Toronto, I would like to think the Cavs are better, but I think theoretical Toronto Raptors are better than the Cavs. So my answer to the question is I think they can get to the sixth spot. I'm going to say that. I think they can get there, Mike.
What about Miami? Is Miami done?
I mean, they're terrible. I don't know if you've watched any of Miami.
They have been pitiful. I have actually.
They were terrible the other night, and they've had flashes, but I know Jimmy Butler's been out, and he's been out actually a lot longer than I thought he was out. But I mean, my God, they look terrible.
Other than Bam, I would say everybody else is below performance at this point. Bam is the only one I think who's probably outperforming expectations. Everybody else, I would say, has been below. Now, Hero's been better than what he was last year during the regular season, but I don't think he's taken the huge leap that a lot of people maybe thought that he was going to get to.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I've seen all these things and people talking about how is Hero properly rated and all that stuff. I think he's totally overrated. He's a good player. If he wasn't – this is going to sound terrible. If he wasn't a white guy, we would be talking about how he's like a great player. Or we wouldn't be talking about this. Agree or
disagree? Yeah, there is to some degree. I think that is – there's a perception out there for sure that maybe holds him back. And I think the color of his skin probably has something to do with it, unfortunately.
I don't think it's correct.
I agree.
I'm just stating
what he's done. Let's put it this way. What he's done as a 20-year-old player, black, white, Asian, whatever, is pretty darn good. And has he become where you're like, oh, this guy's a surefire all-star? No. But is he a guy who at age 20 – you still would want on your team that has a tremendous amount of value and that long-term still projects to be a really, really good, if not an all-star player? I think the answer to that is yes, especially when you consider how he did it in the big moments last year in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so the answer to the question is yes, I think Toronto can creep back in. I don't know about Miami. They just have looked really, really bad. And the season's
short. Like, I mean, we forget that when you're only in a 70-game season and you're sitting at whatever, I think Miami's 6-10 right now, you know, when you're sitting at that level and you got to creep over 5-6 teams in order to get up into that sixth spot. Now, do I expect Miami to be in that mix for the playoffs, for the play-in games? Sure. I mean, I guess Miami right now is 7-13. So that's 20. They're 20 games in. You're more than a quarter of the way through the season, and they're playing at a 350 winning percentage. So not good.
But, no, not good at all.
But, you know, the powerhouses that are ahead of them, the Orlando Magic, the Knicks, the Bulls, I mean, the Hornets,
and
the Cavs.
Magic have a big missing gap now, right? Because Aaron Gordon's out for a few weeks, correct?
Right, with the sprained ankle. You're already missing Jonathan Isaac. You're already missing Fultz. Orlando, I would expect to be down there finishing
in
the bottom
Mike,
four.
I will tell you this. I'm really liking the Cavs' chances at least making the play-in game. I know we're going to have a rough month.
For sure. Let's think about it. Okay. The teams that clearly are – the Pistons are not making the play-in.
They're out.
The Wizards are not making the play-in. Because if things go –
I'm not ready to cut bait with the Wizards yet. I had them in the sixth spot. I'm not ready to cut them.
Okay, man.
I'm not ready to cut them loose.
They're 4-13. Bradley Beal is, I think, going to be out the door at some point this season. I don't know when, but I think at some point he's out the door. Westbrook suddenly had the revival the other night, which when we're talking about great performances, we can touch on him going for 41 after, I don't know what his season high before that was, but it wasn't that high. Let's put it that way. So I don't know. I mean, just the rest of the roster, Thomas Bryant going out with an ACL. Do you really think that Rui Hachimura and Troy Brown and Denny Avdija, those guys are really going to be able to, I don't know. I'm not buying the Wizards. So I have Detroit, the Wizards down there at the bottom. I think Orlando, because of the injuries that we just mentioned, I think they're definitely one of the bottom three. And then do you trust the Knicks, Bulls, or Hornets to –
oh my God, you didn't say the Cavs. I love this.
I'm saying, do you trust one of those teams to fight their way into that 10 spot? I don't know. I mean, I think
you're talking yourself into the Cavs. I like it, Mike. I like it a lot.
Look, I think at this point, I mean, I had the Cavs a little higher than you did going into the season. So I had them 11. I had them one slot out of the play-in. And so if Orlando, I guess, was probably my team that I had in that right now is out theoretically, because I think Miami's going to work their way back in, at least into the play-in tournament. And Orlando, excuse me, Orlando just is not. I mean, I just don't think with those injuries they're going to be able to make it. And the Cavs have gotten individual improvement, and that individual improvement has led to an improvement in their team. I mean, I think just like we talked about a minute ago, where we said that for the Heat, a bunch of players are underperforming what your expectation was. I think if you look at the Cavs, there's a bunch of guys that are probably overperforming what their expectation was coming in, whether it's Drummond, whether it's Sexton, Garland, although he's been hurt. I think when he's been on the floor, he's certainly been better than he was last year.
He had 11 assists yesterday. He looked really good. I don't know if do you see the little flip shot he made?
I've seen a lot of Darius Garland flip shots.
Oh, he went like down the lane, Mike, and he was like under the basket. He faked going back to the left and then went back to the right and like just underhand the ball up in the air. It's fantastic. I can't get it out of my head. It was so good. I've been impressed. He's looked pretty good.
We will know about the Cleveland Cavaliers at the end of the month of February. I know last week I think you read off the Cavs' brutal schedule in the month of February.
Well, the brutal schedule the schedule this week is brutal. I mean,
right, but I mean the whole entire month of February. There's probably only one more easy game.
So they play the Clippers, then they play two against Milwaukee. They play Phoenix, Denver, Portland, Clippers, Warriors, Spurs, Thunder, Hawks, the Rockets, and 76ers. So when I look at that list and I read that list off, I think they have a chance against Portland. I think they have a chance against Golden State. I think they have a chance against the Spurs and Oklahoma City and probably Atlanta. So that's probably that four-game stretch in the middle of the month. And I want to be clear here. I still think that they could lose any of those games too. So
They could easily go through the month and win one or two games.
Yeah. I mean, easily.
And if they do that, you're coming out of this month like 11-20. And at 11-20, I think you're going to have a real hard time. So they got to win 3 or 4 of the 11 or 12 games that they have this month in order to stay afloat.
I completely agree. I think, Mike, they might have a shot, and I know you're going to laugh at me. They might have a shot tomorrow night because Kawhi played a lot of minutes tonight in that game, and they might sit.
That game was in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. The game was in Brooklyn,
so they're coming from Brooklyn into Cleveland tomorrow night. You got to believe that Kawhi's probably going to rest. There's probably a decent chance. I don't disagree with you there.
And we know how Pandemic P is playing, so he's been playing better. But I don't know. I think there's a chance. There's a chance that they sit there. They sit there, their Kawhi, and then the Cavs can win that game if he's out. So
we'll see. All right, enough of the enough bottom of the conference.
Yeah. So let's talk really quickly. I know you, before the podcast, you told me you had a trivia fact you wanted to ask me. So,
hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders, I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
All right, so it's not really necessarily a fact or a question, but it's just kind of an interesting sidelight. When I saw tonight that Fred VanVleet had 54, I got in my head, I said, I wonder who is the worst NBA player to ever score 50 points in an NBA game.
Well, you know, he's the highest ever in Raptors history, as well as the most ever by an undrafted player.
Okay, there you go. All right, so what I thought we would do, just to make this interesting, is I have the 15 worst NBA players to score 50 points in a game, and we're just going to go through and we're going to see if you can identify these 15 players. So when we go through the list, you just tell me, yes, I've heard of this guy, or no, I have no idea who that is.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
All right, okay. And this is not my ranking. This ranking is from thesportster.com. So shout out to thesportster.com. Okay, number 15, Clifford Robinson.
I've heard of Cliff Robinson. He was on Survivor, and he recently passed away.
That is correct. Number 14, The Professor.
Wait.
Andre Miller.
Andre Miller. I definitely heard of him. He played for the Cavs.
That's correct.
Andre Miller could get a legacy Hall of Famer.
I agree. Andre Miller should not. Now, I know that I guess you'd have to see the complete list of who scored 50, but these first two guys are definitely not among – these are not bad NBA players that we've just mentioned. Cliff Robinson played for 16 years. Andre Miller maybe played 17 years, scored over 16,000 points and 8,000 assists. So
Is Cliff in the Hall of Fame? He's got to be.
Cliff Robinson, I don't believe he's in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he's quite a Hall of Famer, but don't quote me on that, but I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame. So anyway, these first two players are definitely not terrible NBA players. They're good NBA players, but they're still on the list of the worst ever to score 50, according to the Sportster. Number 13, now this guy, now we're starting to get more in range of guys who you'd say you would be surprised if they scored 50. Tony Delk,
he played for the Celtics at one point and the Mavericks.
He did play
right?
for the Celtics. He played for the Celtics.
Did he play for the Mavericks as well?
He's played for the University of Kentucky. I have him as with the Phoenix Suns. He probably played for a bunch of teams. My guess is
Hey, but I remember the Celtics. Where he scored 50?
He was a member of the Phoenix Suns. 2001 against Sacramento, he had a career high 53.
Oh, man, Peja must have been guarding him. All right.
that could be. All right, number 12, Willie Burton.
That guy is the first one I haven't heard of.
Okay, Willie Burton played at the University of Minnesota, and then he played with the Heat. He was a first-round draft choice, and I think he flamed out. I don't know. He played with the Heat. He played some with the Sixers. But he actually scored 53 against the Heat when he was playing for the Philadelphia 76ers. Number 11, Charles Smith.
Charles Smith. I mean, pretty sure that's the guy that – that's pretty sure – I don't know Charles Smith, but that sounds like the guy who rescued those girls in Cleveland out of the house. I'm pretty sure that was his name.
Charles Smith is most famous for being blocked four times by the 1991 Chicago Bulls, 1992 Chicago Bulls, when he was a member of the New York Knicks. But he scored 50 when he was with the Los Angeles Clippers, who originally drafted him third overall out of the University of Pittsburgh. Number 10, Dana Barros.
Dana Barros. Oh, I know that guy. He also played for the Celtics, correct?
He did. He probably had with the Celtics. That was probably his best. That was probably his best stint in the NBA. He was with the 76ers, I believe, when he scored. I think he scored exactly 50. So Dana Barros, number 9, Tracy Murray.
Is he related to Lamon?
He is not, but they did go to a school in the same conference.
I don't know Tracy Murray. I know Tracy Morgan.
Lamon Murray played for the Cavs and a few other teams, but he was from Cal Berkeley. Tracy Murray was from UCLA, played for the Washington Wizards, and he shot the ball 29 times. En route to getting a career high 50. Number 8, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
I know that one.
Formerly known as Chris Jackson.
Yep, I know that guy.
Not surprising. He's probably the least surprising guy on the list. I mean, I think he's a guy who, if you put him in the league today and he was able to stay healthy, and of course he had Tourette's syndrome and lots of other things
going on. Yeah.
Yeah, but that guy was, if you're listening to this podcast and you have not watched Chris Jackson LSU highlight mixtapes, it is well worth your time to go back and check out the Chris Jackson.
Mike, you
LSU
always have
mixtapes.
A YouTube reference.
You, man, it's crazy. I mean, his highlights are crazy. Number 7, Rashard Lewis.
Oh, Rashard Lewis. Yeah, I know that one. That one was, yeah, he was.
That's an easy one. Played
for Magic.
The old Seattle Supersonics, played for the Magic. He had 50 points in a Halloween night win in Japan. in Japan is when he scored his 50. Ooh. When he was playing for the Sonics, it looks like. Yeah, he's with the Sonics. All right, number six. Number six. We'll see if you know this one. Walt Wesley.
I know Walt Disney. I don't know I know Walt Frazier. I don't know Walt Wesley.
Walt Wesley at one point held the Cleveland Cavaliers single game scoring record of 50 points on February 19th, 1971 against his former team, the Cincinnati Royals. Walt Wesley poured in 50 points for the Cavs. So I think he held that record actually for quite a long time. Next one, number five, Corey Brewer.
Oh, Corey Brewer. I know that one. That's a surprising 50.
Not Ronnie Brewer. Not Ronnie Brewer. Corey Brewer. Corey Brewer from the University of Florida played with Al Horford and Joakim Noah and did this for a Minnesota Timberwolves team in 2014. Number four, Freeman Williams.
I don't know that one, Mike. I got to be honest.
He scored 51 points for a franchise that no longer exists, or I guess it exists.
St. Louis?
It exists in another city. Sorry. It exists, but just in another city.
Oh.
San Diego Clippers.
Oh. When the team team name actually made sense. All right. Go ahead.
Right. Exactly. Number three, Brandon Jennings.
Ooh. He played for the Bucks. He also was a member of the Pistons, if I'm not incorrect. Maybe I'm wrong in that statement, but
he scored this for – this was the Bucks because he did it two weeks into his NBA career. He scored 55 against the Warriors.
Way to sell yourself high in the first 2 weeks in the
That's
NBA.
Right.
Came close to that.
Not only that, but get this one. He went scoreless in the first quarter. So 55 in the last three quarters for Brandon Jennings.
Wow, that's incredible. Pretty good. That's incredible.
All right. Let's see if you know this one.
Am I impressing you? I know any more people?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I'm trying to think what's been your most impressive get so far. I don't think you've had a great get yet. Let me see. Let me go back and see what you've
done. That's all right. Let's just keep going through the list, Mike.
Nah, I don't think. Tony Delk, I think, is your most impressive get. So let's see what you can do with these last. See what you can do with these last two. This one's interesting because this one's kind of, I don't know. It's right in that nebulous zone where I don't know about your NBA knowledge from this particular era. So, Vernon Maxwell.
Oh well, come on now. You got. Give me a little bit of credit. He played for the Rockets.
Yeah, there you go. All right. What was his nickname?
Oh, God. I don't know. I probably should know.
Think of his last name.
It's the movie. Mad Max?
Mad Max. Right? Yeah, absolutely. Mad Max. Maxwell was – that dude was – he was as talented as anybody back in that time with the Houston Rockets, and he had 51 against your Cleveland Cavaliers in 1991. And number one, which I don't know if this means he's the worst guy ever to score 50, but he currently plays for the Orlando Magic.
I don't know.
Terrence Ross.
He was a member of Terrence the – he had Ross. To be a member of the Rockets. Let me see. Or not the Rockets, the Raptors. He had to have scored it against. Oh, let's take a guess. It's a team. It was probably when they were bad, though, right? This was before they were good.
He tied Vince Carter for the franchise record for most points in the game of 51.
I'm trying to guess when it was.
Okay.
It had to be a terrible team that they were playing against. I don't know.
They were playing the Clippers. It doesn't give a year when he scored it. So, anyway, that's an interesting
2014, Mike. 2014. January 25th, right, 2014.
So, I guess the point here is that you have to be a pretty decent player to score 50. Each of those guys had their moments in the NBA. So, if those are the 15 worst, then it's still a pretty good accomplishment. So, congrats to Fred VanVleet.
Yeah. Awesome. That was quite the deep dive. All right.
That was.
All right. So, and you know what? Listen, tonight, if you were smart, Mike, you know, were you smart, Mike, or no? If you were smart, You generally would have played Thrive Fantasy and picked Fred VanVleet and taken a choice on whether he was going to score the over. And if he chose the over, you for sure were going to do well. Thrive Fantasy is a new world of fantasy sports gambling. You select 10 prop bets that each carry a point total based on their likelihood of happening. You're going to use the promo code HOOPHEADS when you sign up today, and you'll receive an instant deposit match up to $50 on your first deposit of $20 or more. Download Thrive Fantasy on the App Store or Play Store, or by visiting their website, www.thrivefantasy.com. Sign up and prop up today. And I want to say, I signed up today, Mike. It was super easy, and I'm excited to make some NBA bets tomorrow. So I'm gonna give it a shot.
If you like the NBA, give it a shot. Give Thrive Fantasy a shot. Fun game, and you just have to know the top players. You don't have to study the end of the bench in the NBA. You just study the top players, and you can figure things out.
Poor Yogi Ferrell. Can't even mention him anymore. He's not on the team.
No.
Oh, poor guy. All right. Really quickly, the other big performance we need to talk about is that Dame Lillard ridiculousness that happened. And that was absolutely insane what they were. I don't exactly know what they were doing there. The jump ball, the fact that he got it, he banked three, made a three from in that game. They looked like they were dead in the water. He's just really, really good. I picked him for the MVP. I don't think that's happening because I don't think they're good enough. But he's playing really, really well considering three of his players are out. And on that note as well, Carmelo tonight, you see Carmelo passed, he's now 13th in the NBA all-time three-point list. He passed Dominique Wilkins, by the way.
All-time three-point list or all-time scoring list?
Oh, all-time scoring list, I'm sorry. Passed Dominique
Wilkins. Yeah, I was going to say. I don't think he's passing Dominique at third. I don't think Dominique's 13th.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, he passed him and made him 13th on all-time scoring list. And once again, I want to reiterate, he is a Hall of Famer, and he is probably going to go down. I'm still going to say on this, I'll die on this hill, Mike. I think he belongs in the top 50 in NBA history, Carmelo Anthony. I'm going to say that right now. Your take.
Well, I think Carmelo, I mean, he's clearly a Hall of Famer. I mean, I don't think you can get to 13th all-time in scoring and not be a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's impossible. You look at some of the guys who are in the Hall of Fame, and they don't approach anywhere near the resume that Carmelo Anthony has. I think the biggest thing with Carmelo, I've said it numerous times, in his prime, I don't think there's a guy in the league at the time that I would have given the ball to other than him in the last seconds to get me a basket, because Carmelo could get you a basket all different ways. He could spot up, shoot over the top of you. He could put the ball on the floor and then pull up and shoot a jump shot. He could post you up. He just had so many ways of scoring, especially in the clutch, that he was just a special offensive player. The knock, obviously, on Carmelo was he never won at the highest level, and he was sort of indifferent on the defensive end of the floor. So is he a top 10 player all time? No. Is he a top 50 player all time? Depends on where you rank the importance of winning. And obviously, there's a lot of guys in the top 50 probably who have not won NBA titles.
Charles Barkley.
Yeah, I agree. But when you start to put together that list and you start factoring in and looking at what makes a guy rank where on that list, it just depends on how much you value winning titles. And if you value winning titles, then you're going to bump them down a little bit. If you maybe discount that and just look at the complete body of work, especially statistically on the offensive side of the ball, then he ranks among the very, very best offensive players of all time. And he's obviously continuing to still get it done in a much more limited role, obviously, with Portland. But still, he's still an effective player for the Portland Trail Blazers. So, kudos to Carmelo.
Yep, I agree. So, do you want to talk at all about Dame, Mike?
Yeah, I think what was coming through my head as you were talking about Dame Lillard is I consider him to be the bizarro James Harden. In that when Dame has an opportunity to knock you out, whether it's the regular season or the playoffs, seems like if it comes down to one big moment or one big shot, I don't know, he might be the most, at this point, automatic guy or the guy that you have the most confidence in that he's going to get it done in that one moment. Now, I know he's had games where, you know, his team needed him. I think about the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors where they got swept, or the year against the Nuggets when CJ had the big game seven and they lost to Denver and they lost to the Nuggets. But in a one singular moment type shot, I'm not sure that there's anybody in the league that I'd be more confident in at a given moment than Dame. And to be able to score 6 points in 8 seconds on two threes, I mean, it's ridiculous. And if you're Chicago, the fact that you let that happen is embarrassing. But it's happened before, and I'm sure Dame will continue to make it happen again.
Yep, I agree. All right, time for a word from our sponsors.
Do you want to score more? Training with the Shoticle is the easiest way to score more. The game is changing, and data scientists are determining the best ways to score. Millions of computer simulations determine where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots, and when it's best to use the backboard. The Shoticle provides those highest percentage shots. From beginners to next-level athletes, the Shoticle is helping players increase their shooting percentages. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more.
All right, we are back, and now we are going to talk about a report that came out today that it sounds like the NBA and the NBAPA are really, really close to agreeing on having an All-Star game in Atlanta on March 7th. And this is surprising to me because they had originally talked about not doing it. Is it a money thing, Mike? It's got to be a money thing, right? Like, what's the reason to do this? What is the reason to do this if it's not money?
Yeah, I mean, money has to be driving it. I was going to ask when we were thinking about this topic and you brought it to me, is who's driving it? Is it the players want to have this game? Doesn't seem that. I mean, I know they like to be recognized as All-Stars and go to All-Star Weekend, but that All-Star Weekend is obviously not going to be the same as it usually is in terms of partying and being able to be out in public and all the sort of fanfare that goes along with it. So it doesn't seem like the players would really be pushing for
All-Star game. Here, did you read the article I sent you or no, Mike?
Because I didn't read it.
So I guess a big part of it is that Chris Paul's been pushing to have the All-Star game in Atlanta and including a plan to use the game to benefit historically black colleges and universities and COVID-19 relief. So if the players are trying to use this as a platform for that kind of thing, like maybe they'll make an argument to do it, and they are going to be willing to do it. So, and it's also easy because if they played it in Atlanta, that's where Turner Sports is. So, you know, that's easy for TNT to broadcast and not really spend as much money. You know,
I think it's a good thing. Look, it's always a fun event for the league. It's a showcase for the players, for the league. And so if you can figure out a way to have it where there's some upside for whether it's the players and social justice causes, whether it's for the league because they can sell advertising on the game and bring in more revenue, and the players sign off on it, the league signs off on it, to me, why not go ahead and do it? You already have – how long is that break? Is it a full week?
It's March 5th to the 10th is what they have currently planned.
Okay, so, you know, at that point, if you play one game, they're probably not going to have all the other festivities surrounding it.
The report was that they would do it all in one day. So they would do, like, the dunk contest. If they were to do the dunk contest and the three-point contest, it would happen in the, like, afternoon, and the game would happen in the evening. So it would basically be a whole day affair.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, from a fan standpoint, clearly you'd want to have it. From a player standpoint, if you can utilize that to continue to get your message for social justice out there in front of the public eye, why not? And from a league perspective, if you're going to bring in more in revenue from advertising and from TV than you are going to put out to put the game on, then why not go ahead and do it? I don't see where it hurts anything.
Yep, I agree. All right.
Plus, that allows us to figure out who's going to be on All-Star teams and see the snake draft and everything else that goes along with it. So,
okay. The next thing we have to talk about is last night, courtside Karen, Mike.
This is
the most ridiculous thing.
You can just leave it. All you have to do is just say courtside Karen, and that's enough. Like, it just that in and of itself as a nickname is, that's one of the best
that's
things.
2020.
It's quality. 2020, it's a quality hashtag. It's a quality nickname, and whatever. This woman, what a buffoon, and kudos to LeBron for calling her out, not letting her get away with saying whatever it was she was saying on the floor, and then going on social media afterward. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then she of course posted a retraction today on social media. She was just too fired up. Her husband and her are big avid sports fans, and LeBron was questioning his masculinity and other stuff. And listen, I'm not going to get into the whole thing. I just think she's ridiculous. That's a conversation for another podcast.
Courtside Karen is enough. That's all we need to say, and it's all good.
All right. And with that, we're going to take another break because your dog needs to go to the bathroom.
Hey, hoopheads. We all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E. And use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's ARYSE.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
All right, we're back. And we're going to talk about Jokic and Embiid being named Conference Players of the Month for obviously the East and the Western Conference. And here's my big thing. The Nuggets are playing really, really well. Jokic had a great game the other day, 47 points. But the Sixers are also playing really well. Embiid's looked really, really good, probably the best Embiid's looked. And he looks to be somewhat healthy. Obviously, that's a big question mark a lot of times. Is he going to remain healthy? That's to be seen. But been really impressive performances by them. Jokic is basically averaging a triple-double, just under a triple-double. Embiid's doing some great things for his team and for my fantasy team. Mike, your take on Jokic, Embiid, and implications for possible MVP voting later this year.
Well, first of all, the fact that you have two centers being named as the Conference Players of the Month in this era of small ball and shooting threes. And I know both of these guys shoot threes, and they're both, despite their massive size, they're both inside-outside players. Both of them hit threes. Both of them shoot threes. Both of them can post up and mash you down on the block. So in a lot of ways, they have some similarities, I guess. Clearly, when you look at them and you look at their bodies, maybe you could say they both could be in better shape. Clearly, Embiid looks more of the part of what you would picture an elite athlete looking like, as opposed to Nikola Jokic and what he looks like. Although you compare him again, he's in much better condition this year, I think, than he's been in years past, at least from an appearance standpoint. And he's played some incredible minutes in the past, even when he theoretically hasn't looked like he's in terrific shape. I've texted you, I don't know, at least a couple times, just with a simple text of, I love Jokic. And to me, this guy is the most interesting guy to watch in the entire league, just because he does things at such a snail's pace and in such an interesting way, in a different way than so many other great players in the league get things done. He's not
Mike, doing you're just it with, really impressed with him moving at a snail's pace, because that's how you would play your game if you were.
That's exactly how I would play. If I was a 7 foot tall Serbian, that's exactly how I would want to play the game of basketball. But you watch him, and he seems like he's moving slow, and yet he kind of just worms his way into wherever he wants to go. And he's just an incredible passer. His jump shot now, like, I think back to our conversation heading into the playoffs now, whatever, 2 years ago, which was really the first time that Denver was going to make the playoffs with Jokic. And our conversation at that point was, look, he's having a really good year, but is he really a guy that you can just give the ball to?
And well, I remember you specifically saying, Mike, I don't know that I've watched Jokic play more than
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and I remember that conversation as well. And my concern was that, look, is this guy? Yeah, he's a great player, but is he going to be able to get you buckets as the number one option on a playoff team? And I think the answer to that question has been proven the last two playoff runs. And this year he's been even better. And I think that if you look at what he's doing and you look at sort of how the Nuggets have surged over the last 10 games, they're 7-3 in their last 10, they're 12-8, they're up to fourth in the West. I would guess Utah's one right now. I would guess that Denver is going to finish in the top four. And I think they probably even have a chance of getting up to the second spot, maybe. I don't think they're gonna beat out both the Lakers and the Clippers in the regular season, but I could see them overtaking one of those teams, depending on injuries and COVID and whatever else might happen.
Load management.
But if Denver finishes in the top with a top three seed and Jokic is hovering around that triple double mark, he's going to get some serious, serious consideration for MVP. And then on the other side of it, in the East, Embiid, you can say the exact same thing. If Philly continues to be atop the Eastern Conference and Embiid continues to put up the numbers that he's put up to this point, then I think he's going to get some serious MVP consideration, especially considering the fact that, at least statistically, Ben Simmons has taken a little bit of a step back in terms of his offensive statistics, which may be more effective for their team. But as far as him individually, he's kind of taken that step back. And it seems, as you've said all along, that it's kind of Embiid's team. And as Embiid goes,
he's finally jumping off of the Ben Simmons bandwagon. I love it,
Mike. No, I'm not jumping off the Simmons bandwagon. I still think if they're going to win a title, Simmons, at the very worst, is going to have to be 1B. I don't think he can be a number two. I think he has to be, at worst, a 1B in order for the Sixers to win a title and maximize what they're going to be. But look, Embiid's been terrific. He's been better than Simmons has this year. He's in better shape. He's able to do the things that he does for longer out on the floor, for more minutes. And if he continues to do that, Philly's going to be really, really, really tough to beat. And I look in the Eastern Conference and you say, if Philly's at their best with as big of a team as they are, they're going to be tough. Because I look at, okay, you think about if they're going to play Milwaukee or they're going to play Brooklyn, who I think are probably the two most likely to me, it's Philly, Brooklyn, or Milwaukee that's going to come out of the East, I think, at this point. And I think Philly matches up really well with both of those teams. And then let's say Philly advances out of the Eastern Conference and they go play the West. Well, what are most teams afraid of when it comes to playing the Lakers? Their size, right?
You're
afraid of trying to – how do you match up when the Lakers go small and Anthony Davis is at center? How do you match up with LeBron and AD? Well, if you're Philly, it's easy, right? I mean, Simmons guards LeBron and Embiid guards Anthony Davis. And now look
– and that's real easy.
Can Embiid and Simmons stop those two guys? No. But
can they slow them down?
Can they at least make life more difficult for them than a lot of other teams that potentially would try to match up with the Lakers?
Sure.
I would say yes. So is Philly constructed for the playoffs? Do they have guys who are mentally tough enough to make it through four rounds of the playoffs and beat, if let's say it is the Lakers waiting for them in the finals, are they mentally tough enough to be able to get that done? I don't know. But that goes to who in the Eastern Conference, who do you trust in the Eastern Conference playoffs of those teams that have a legitimate chance of getting out of the East, who do you trust?
Well, I don't trust the Nets because of Harden.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I don't trust.
The do you Bucks. Trust Milwaukee?
I don't trust Milwaukee because of Budenholzer.
Right, and because of Giannis' free throw shooting at this point.
Yeah.
To me, that's a huge red flag. So I don't, and you can't trust the Bucks because they've fizzled out the last 2 years when they've had, and again, they have the best point differential in the Eastern Conference by far. They're plus 8.2 points, per game, and the next closest is Brooklyn at 4.5. So they've almost doubled the nearest team's point differential, and they have a better point differential than anybody in the West. So the Bucks have been kind of inconsistent, but they're still going to be right there. Giannis has got to figure out the free throw shooting. And if he does that, then maybe. But I don't know that you can trust the Bucks.
Hey, you know what team I trust over the 76ers? The Cavs, because they beat the 76ers.
All right.
I'm obviously saying that in jest, Mike.
I'm going to leave that one alone. And Philly, it's hard to trust that Embiid's going to be healthy. It's hard to trust that Simmons, what's he going to do? Is he going to disappear like he has at times in the playoffs in the past offensively? The nice thing is I don't think it's so hard with Simmons because defensively he's so good and he has such command of the ball on the open floor, and yet it still feels like, man, in a half-court situation in the playoffs, what are you going to have him doing? Where's he going to stand? What's he going to do? What's he going to contribute offensively? And I don't know. None of those teams, and then you throw, I guess, Boston and the Pacers in there, there's not one of those teams that I'm like, oh, that team is a for sure Eastern Conference finalist. I mean, I could see any of those teams losing in the second round. And I could see any of those teams, if things broke right, I could even see the Pacers making the finals, depending on how things played out, if they get Caris LeVert back at some point.
Yeah.
Sabonis is really good. Turner's been great. I just don't know who you trust in the Eastern Conference.
Well, I trust that it's going to be an exciting path to figuring out what the heck's going on. All right.
Okay, let's who's the best coach? Wait, before we do that, this is an interesting question. Who's the best coach of those top five teams in the East?
I mean, I'm not a huge Doc Rivers fan, but you got to probably say him, right? He's the one that's got the championship.
It's either him or Brad Stevens, right? Depending on what you think of
Stevens. Like, listen, I've been a big Brad Stevens believer, but I also have to start thinking, like, you got to start doing something. Like, you got to win something at some point. Like,
right, I agree. Look, I agree with you. It's not... I love Steve Nash, but Steve Nash is a first-year coach, so we don't really know what he's going to perform like under the pressure of if the Nets go down 2-1 or they're down 3-1, is Nash going to be able to rally the troops to be able to get them to come back? And then we all know I would clearly rank Budenholzer as last in that group of five, and I don't know, you might be able to put all 30 teams out
there.
If
you want to fry an egg on his head, he's number one, though.
I feel bad because, I don't know, maybe he's a good dude, but you got to do something different with that team in the playoffs. I mean, you got to figure something out. All right, I'm ready to go to the West. Is that where you're
going? All right, yeah, I'm sorry I was going before you asked me that question. So now we look at the West, and it's a little more, I don't want to say, I don't even know if I can say, like, we got Memphis who was on a streak, and they've all of a sudden creeped up in there. Now, obviously, they've played a lot less games than these teams because of the COVID issues they've had, and available players, and Ja Morant being injured. Now he's back, and they've been playing pretty good. But the Jazz are the team. Now, I know they lost the other night to Jokic, but they have looked really, really good, shooting the ball so fantastically, and they've been impressive now. You've been a big Jazz believer the last few years, and I think you kind of jumped off the Jazz bandwagon this year, but they've looked really good. The Suns have looked good. Like, I look at the top six teams, and then somehow Golden State, Mike, I don't even know how it's possible. I didn't even realize they were 11-9. Well, I said the Cavs could beat them. I didn't realize they were 11-9. I'm kind of impressed. Your take on the West, Mike.
Well, Utah is interesting for sure. The fact that they're currently sitting in the number one seed, and Mitchell has been good, but not great. I think the big difference, if you look at them compared to the playoffs last year, you have Mike Conley is far better. We talked about that a little bit last week, that he's back to at least close to being what he was as Memphis Mike Conley. So if you get that Mike Conley all year and you get that Mike Conley in the playoffs, that adds a whole other dimension for Utah. And then you have the Bogdanovich piece, who, again, he was out with, I think, what was it, wrist surgery during the playoffs last year. So he's back. And so now you have another guy who can shoot from three. You have another guy who can put the ball on the floor a little bit. Ingles has always been a creative passer. Gobert continues to get better offensively. Now, he's never going to be a guy that you can post up and you're going to throw the ball into him and he's going to make moves like Hakeem Olajuwon. That's not who he is. But he is much better than he was 5 years ago, catching the ball in traffic, finishing with dunks, rolling to the rim. He does a lot of things still offensively that help your team. He's not a complete dominant offensive player, but he's also not a liability on that end, and he's as good as he's ever been defensively. So you put all that together, and Utah is off to a really, really nice start. I think the question with Utah has been and will continue to be, what's their ceiling? I think they're a very, very high floor team because they have a bunch of solid pros that play together and know what they're doing, but can they step their game up in the highest leverage moments to beat some of these other better teams in the West? And I think that's where, when you get into the playoffs, that's where you're going to find yourself with Utah, is asking, can they get to a level that can allow them to compete with LeBron and AD, or with Jokic and Murray, or with Kawhi and Paul George? Can they get to that level consistently over a 7-game series, where they're going to have to win probably against, you know, two or three of those teams in order to make it to the finals? That I don't know about. I think clearly the Lakers are still the best team, and they may not end up with the number one seed just based on guys resting and the way they're playing and just indifference. But I think when push comes to shove, the Lakers are going to be the best team. The Clippers have probably had, to this point, I would say, a better regular season than I think most people probably would have thought. Kawhi's been really, really good. Paul George has been a little bit up and down, but generally speaking, he's been pretty good. I think their additions, Serge Ibaka and Luke Kennard, have both helped and been useful pieces for them, at least as regular season players. For the Clippers, same thing as with the Jazz, just in a slightly different way. After the meltdown against Denver, I don't think anybody trusts the Clippers, and especially with the history of the Clippers franchise. Do you trust the Clippers?
No. Never.
And so if that's the case, if you don't trust them, then, I mean, I don't see, let's put it this way, I would not put any stock in the Clippers being the Western Conference champions. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other teams that I would pick before I said, hey, I think the Clippers are going to get out of the West. Denver, we talked about him a little bit earlier. Jokic has been spectacular, continues to just improve and get better. Jamal Murray, his playoff star, has kind of crashed and burned, and he's gone back to being 18 points a game, better than average, but not quite an all-star Jamal Murray. And that's where there's a lot of Bradley Beal rumors with Denver, where if they could add Beal and now Murray gets bumped down to your third guy in the regular season, and then in the playoffs, if he gets hot and you could ride him, and you got Jokic, then that team becomes a serious title contender. And I don't know what you'd have to give up, probably Gary Harris and Barton and Michael Porter Jr. and probably some draft picks. But, you know, Beal's only 26 years old. It might be worth it for Denver to do that. To me, I think those are the four teams that have a legitimate chance or a legitimate argument for saying, I think we can make it out of the West. I don't think Phoenix. I don't think Golden State. Portland, I mean, they have to be healthy. And none of their guys that are out have really proven that they can stay healthy for long periods of time. So to say that Portland all of a sudden is going to get Nurkic back and CJ is going to come back off the foot injury and that they're going to just start clicking on all cylinders and be able to make it out of the Western Conference. I don't see that. I think one of the four teams that are currently sitting in those top slots are going to get there. I don't know how you feel, but do you buy Phoenix at all?
No. I mean, listen, it's a nice story. It's a nice story. I like Chris. I still like Chris Paul. I feel bad because I feel like he's gonna have a lot of stats. He's gonna fall into the category of a guy who has lots of stats. He's gonna look really, really good in all NBA history, and then you're gonna realize that he's probably never playing in the NBA Finals. Right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at his statistical resume is gonna be really, really, really good. And he's gonna be a Hall of Famer without question. But he's a guy who, when he looks back on his own career, when people rewrite the history of his career, everybody's always going to wonder, well, this guy kind of had this reputation as being the orchestrator of teams, and yet he was never able to orchestrate his team into the NBA Finals. And so that's going to go on his resume. Look, all these guys, whether they like it or not, you ultimately end up getting judged by how many championships you win. And if you get – all it takes, Dirk Nowitzki, classic example, all it takes is one for your legacy to be completely rewritten. Now, is Dirk considered one of the top five players in the history of the league or the top 10? Probably not. But is he remembered completely differently because he won that one title over the Heat in 2011? Absolutely. If he hadn't won that, if the Heat had taken care of business and blown out the Mavericks like they probably should have, then he's remembered in a completely different light. Whereas winning a title, it's never a question that he has to answer. And so for a guy like Carmelo or Chris Paul or guys that are retired already like Barkley, Karl Malone, you have to answer those questions. Why couldn't you win the big one? And that question sticks with you for the rest of your life. And I, like you said, barring something completely whacked out, I don't see Phoenix making it to the Western Conference Finals, even let alone make it to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, because that would require them, if they hypothetically stay in the 4 or 5 seed, that's going to require them to beat the number one seed in the second round, and I just don't see that happening. They're not built to do that. So,
not at this point. I mean, Booker's been a little bit down considering where he was coming out of the bubble, and Ayton continues to get better, and maybe 3 or 4 years from now, Ayton can be that guy that can help you win a title, but I don't think he's quite there yet.
Yep, I agree. All right, Mike, do you have anything else on the Western Conference teams? I'm excited to watch the Cavs play the Clippers tomorrow night. We'll see what happens there and see what the result is with that game. I'm going to hope that Pandemic P shows up and the Cavs have a chance to win. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing about this season just collectively is when you kind of look at both conferences as a whole, there's less really, really pitiful teams at the bottom of each conference. So the worst team in the Eastern Conference, Wizards or Detroit, Wizards by record, but I think you could probably make a case that Detroit might be the worst team. And then in the West, you got the Timberwolves, who have been without Karl Anthony Towns. They've still won 5 games, which might put them ahead of the pace that they were playing at last year. It's certainly what some of the worst teams are. And you have more teams kind of bunched up in that 6 through 12 in both conferences. You know, I think in the West and the East, you have a bunch of teams with 8, 9, 10 wins that, again, could go either way depending upon how their season breaks with injuries and the schedule and COVID and everything else that goes into it. So it's been an interesting season. There's more teams kind of sandwiched in that middle, whereas I feel like the last couple years, the league's been both top heavy and bottom heavy with bad teams.
Yep, I completely agree. And the thing is too, Mike, with all that being said, it feels like there's most games when I watch, like, you think you're going to know the outcome, but all of a sudden you randomly have a result that's like out of left field. And I feel like every team has an opportunity in every game, whether it's a realistic opportunity or not. Would you agree with that statement? Like, there's just some games, like, I would have never thought the Cavs were going to sweep the Nets in a 2-game series. Like, I never would have thought that.
And then turn around and lose back-to-back to the Knicks and Timberwolves.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's really what we have to think about is – that this is just a weird year, and we're going to have some results, which we've talked about this many times. We're going to have results that we just can't explain.
I agree. It'll be interesting to see if that carries over once we get to the playoffs. Like, I think this is a perfect year for the play-in tournament because those 7 through 10 seeds are all – it's going to be a weird mix of teams. Like, you're going to have – I'm guessing you're going to have a team in either conference that is totally disgruntled that they're having to play in that. So you look at the East and you say, okay, if Miami crawls its way back in there, here they are this past year, an NBA finalist, and now they're playing in the play-in tournament. And then on the West, you say, okay, Luka, who going into the season is maybe the presumptive MVP favorite, and at this point still, if they could turn it around, could still probably get himself back in the race. But Dallas, 8-13, they're in 13th place in the Western Conference. Their odds of, again, just like the Heat, moving up into that sixth slot to not have to be in the play-in tournament seems pretty low. Or maybe New Orleans moves up in there with Zion and Brandon Ingram, or I don't know. There's just a lot of – and then you're going to have some teams that – so those are the teams that are going to expect to be there and kind of have their chip on their shoulder, like, oh, you know, why are we having to be in the play-in game? We thought we were going to finish in the top six. And then you're going to have some wackadoo teams that people thought were going to be at the very bottom, where, like, if the Cavs make it, or if Sacramento makes it out in the West, or Oklahoma City somehow climbs in there, these teams that are completely unexpected – it could make for some very, very interesting games and some interesting results when you start looking at that play-in tournament.
Yep, I completely agree.
Anything else we need to hit?
I don't think so. I think we covered it all. I guess I shouldn't say we covered it all. I think we covered a lot of information, Mike. And there's always more that we could talk about. But I think we've talked enough tonight, Mike.
I agree. I think we've hit on most of the key storylines going on in the league right now, and we will continue to pay attention to what's going on in the NBA. Please check out some of our other NBA team podcasts. We added a new show this week with Matthew Wadley at the Buzzer, which is going to cover the Charlotte Hornets. So make sure you check out Matthew on At the Buzzer. And if you haven't gotten a chance to check out Bryce Haas, our other newest podcast, the Wizards Hoops analyst, Bryce, is coming out with an episode after every Wizards game, giving you a quick recap of what went on during those games. And plus all the other shows that we've had, continue to check those out. Our lineup of podcasters is doing a great job with our NBA coverage, and we're going to continue to try to grow the network. So if you're out there and you're interested in hosting an NBA pod, or you already have an NBA podcast and you're looking for a home for it, let us know. Mike@hoopheadspod.com. And to everyone out there who continues to support both our NBA show and our two weekly interview shows here on the Hoopheads podcast, we appreciate that. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.